Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. 77 million Americans didn't vote in the last presidential election. That's 44% of eligible voters who stayed home. And while Biden ran away with the popular vote in 2020, his Electoral College victory was stitched together with a handful of votes in a few swing states. And 2024 isn't going to be any different. This will be a close election, which means getting souls to the polls could make all the difference. So how do you do it? Convince people who have never voted or haven't voted in a long time to re-register, get out, and actually vote? Paul Beck is Professor Emeritus and the Academy Professor of Political Science at Ohio State University. Beck's also published 9 books and countless articles on voting behavior, political parties, and public opinion. Professor Beck, welcome back to All Sides.
Good to be with you, Anna.
I want to begin with a deceptively simple question. Why do some people vote faithfully in every election while others never exercise their right?
Well, there are really 3 different groups of voters, it seems to me. They're the always voters, people who are strongly motivated to vote no matter what. And there are a lot of them, millions and millions of them. And then there's another group that you could call almost in and outers. They vote sometimes. They tend not to vote in midterm elections, though they're drawn usually into presidential elections by the excitement of the election. And then there's a group, millions and millions of Americans, who never vote. And the questions that we ask as researchers are, well, okay, what differentiates these people? The first group probably have a very strong sense of civic obligation, that one thing you do in a democracy is you vote. That's part of it. Another group is drawn by candidates and issues, but they're kind of in and out. And then the third group pays very little attention at all to politics. And so I think when you're trying to mobilize turnout, you're focused not so much on the first group, because they're going to vote anyway. And they are almost entirely partisans to begin with.
That's fair.
But the second group is in and out, and you'd like to draw those on your side in that particular election. And so that's where the mobilization efforts are focused. Maybe you give up on the others, although one of the groups that is very weakly motivated to vote are young people. The lowest turnout rates among any age group are people in the 18 to 29 age group. And they are very difficult to get to the polls, to mobilize. The term that we tend to use in research on them is that they pay very high startup costs. They move around a lot. They would have to change their residence. They'd have to re-register somewhere. They have to register in the first place. And what you try to do, I think, if you're trying to mobilize voters, is to identify them, find out where they are, find out what can motivate them, and then reach out to them. One interesting study, by the way, that I should share with you is a study that was done in Denmark, of all places. And they were very interested in knowing why some people there didn't vote. They found that the group that was least likely to vote were people who were living alone. And the argument that they were making, and it fits the United States as well, is that voting also is a social activity. One reason people turn out to vote is that their friends and neighbors and spouses persuade them to. Or they may go together with somebody. If they're living alone, particularly among the elderly, it's very hard to draw them out. And there are attempts to try to make it easier for them to vote, but there are interests that don't want to make it easier for them to vote, figuring that these may not be people who will vote for them.
You know, I was looking at a lot of surveys of why people say they don't vote, and a lot of it seems to be they don't feel like the stakes of the election are personal for them. They don't feel like their vote matters. They see it as a waste of time, maybe because they live in a state where it's not going to matter. How do you convince them otherwise?
Well, some of them are so turned off by politics that they are probably not going to be persuaded to vote. Others, on the other hand, could be persuaded to vote if they think that there is a choice between the candidates. If you cycle back to 2 months ago, there were a lot of people who may have liked Biden as a president, but they really weren't ready to vote for him.
There was a lot of double haters a couple months ago.
Exactly. And they really didn't like the choices they had, and so they weren't going to vote. Harris has changed that, at least on the Democratic side, and has motivated a lot of people now to say that they are going to vote and in her case, support her. Trump has always had this kind of hardcore of enthusiasts.
He's got a, what's it called, a high floor.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And again, he's not really topped the low 40s. But in an election with third-party candidates and independent candidates, sometimes that's enough. But this election, as is true of most presidential elections, is going to be a turnout election.
It always
is. Campaigns focus on mobilizing their base.
It's so simple and yet so complicated.
Yes.
You just have to turn out more of your folks than the other guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, one of the interesting things I looked at was non-voters in 2020 tended to be younger, which makes sense. They also tended to be more Latino than the population. So Latinos are registered to vote in far lower numbers than their white and black counterparts. What is going on there? In part, why the Latino population also tends to be younger.
Yes. Well, I think it's hard for them to connect with the politics of the country. Some of them, of course, are recent immigrants. They may be citizens, but it's still, it is something that is difficult to draw them into politics, that is. Others are first-generation Americans. Their parents were immigrants, but there probably wasn't a lot of talk about politics in the home. And so they, too, are drawn in with difficulty. Campaigns focus on that, trying to get them to commit, to be involved in elections. If you live in South Texas, where a lot of immigrants or a lot of Mexican-Americans live, there are not many contests there. You know, Texas is or has been a one-party state. That's changing slowly over time. May change in a big way this year. Probably not, but who knows. And so it's hard to draw people into a contest, even a presidential contest, when they feel that in the state in which they live, there's really not much competition. That doesn't give them much choice.
Yeah, I've actually always said that if Texas ever goes for a Democrat, we're going to get national popular vote, but neither here nor there. We also want to hear from you guys this hour. Do you vote religiously in every election? Do you maybe skip a few here and there? Maybe you only vote in the presidential, or perhaps you have never voted in your life. We want to hear from all of you about why you vote or why you don't. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. I do want to note that 2020 was a record year for turnout. Nearly 80 million people sat out the general election, but it was the highest turnout that we've seen in a long, long time. And so it's strange to say that, oh my gosh, 80 million people didn't vote, while this is the best turnout we've had in years.
Well, it was
both are true.
Both are true. It was a contest that I think many people, voters certainly, but maybe even some non-voters thought, or historic non-voters, thought was a really important contest. And it was talked about in 2020 as probably the most important election in decades. Now, 2024 is one of the most important elections in decades. But, you know, the feeling, I think, is that it really matters. Now, you know, another point to think about is that the United States has a lot of elections. And if you're going to be a regular voter, a voter who votes in all elections, you could be voting up to 3 and 4 times a year. And that's a lot. A lot to think about. I lived in Ann Arbor at one point.
We won't hold that against you.
I know. I've overcome that, actually. And I remember one election when I was living there where there were 6 contests that year.
Oh, my goodness.
And you were voting on local offices. You were voting in primaries. You were voting, of course, in the presidential election. And if you're kind of lukewarm about politics in general, you're thinking, oh, it's just too much. I'm not going to be able to study the ballot this time and get to know the candidates, so I'm just going to sit this one out.
I have felt that as somebody who's covered elections for a very long time. I mean, we had the 2022 elections, then we had an August special election in 2023, then we had a November election in 2023. We're having another election in 2024, and who knows, maybe minimum wage, we'll be voting on it in 25.
Probably will, yes.
It definitely is a lot of election, and election fatigue is a real thing.
Yes.
Also, get out the vote campaigns are a real thing. And I will say economists who study them, they have middling success at best. But that doesn't stop us from trying. I grew up in the rock the vote age. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, yes, I do.
And like the vote or die campaign. And I think that's actually being revived this year, which I find interesting. But I didn't realize that rock the vote started actually in 1990. And we have an audio clip of Madonna, who made her pitch for voting.
Dr. King, Malcolm X, freedom of speech is as good as sex. Abe, Lincoln, Jefferson, Tom, they didn't need the atomic bomb. We need beauty, we need art, we need government with rock. Get in rhythm. Don't give up your freedom of speech. Power to the people is in our reach. Don't just sit there, let's get to it. Speak your mind, there's nothing to it. Vote! And if you don't vote, you're going to get a spanking.
It's so tongue-in-cheek. I kind of love it for, it's just, it's a pitch for the kids, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Who are now the Gen X adults.
Exactly. Well, I grew up in the Vietnam era, and of course there was a lot of focus there on getting to the polls to vote against the war or to vote against Nixon or vote against Humphrey, you know, whatever it happened to be in the late 60s. And mobilization has been with us forever. And, of course, it takes different kinds of pitches to be able to attract voters. In some cases,
we call it micro-targeting today.
It is, yes. And in some cases, if this particular music star is somebody you really like, and they say, go to the polls and express yourself in that way, you're inclined to listen to them. In other cases, it is a neighbor who pulls you to the polls. As I said earlier, it may be a spouse or a friend who embarrasses you by saying, you're not going to vote. Well, you should vote. It's a part of your democratic responsibility. And I think these groups that are trying to mobilize voters, trying to campaign to either get voters to register or to get them after they've registered to vote, they're trying different pitches. And you look at different organizations, some of which I think you're going to have represented on your show today.
Yeah.
And they have different targets and different messages that they're trying to transmit. You know, the other thing to remember, by the way, is that in the United States, the rules make it somewhat difficult to vote. There are costs to voting. You have to first register. And you have to register usually outside of the excitement of the election campaign. Or you can't vote in the upcoming election. Registration was instituted in this country to try to reduce the electorate, to try to cut down on the number of people who were mobilized by political bosses and others to vote. And we still see a lot of that. You know, one side doesn't really want there to be large turnout. The other side may think, rightly or wrongly, that a larger turnout is going to be beneficial to them. And so there is a battle going on right now over eligibility for voting. It's going on in Ohio. I just saw today that Secretary LaRose has announced a new way to make it more difficult for people to vote, and this is through the drop boxes and access to drop boxes. So, you know, there are all of these things going on. We, by the way, during the COVID period, during the COVID pandemic, tried to make it in most states easier for people to vote because people didn't want to leave their homes and were, in fact, encouraged not to leave their homes. And so many of those particular, what would you call them, inducements to voting have been rolled back in states, making it harder now for people to vote outside of the pandemic era.
I want to take a call from Isaac in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides, Isaac.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So do you vote? Do you not vote?
I do vote. I'm 25 now. I've been voting since I was 22. Recently graduated nursing school, and that the healthcare policies are what motivated me to get out there and have some say.
Yeah. You know, I think that's what a lot of people, particularly during the pandemic, if they were really unhappy with how it was being handled, if they were happy with how it's being handled, there was a lot of strong feelings. And it's about making it personal, right? Those stakes.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, I think that it, and voting is habitual, though, right? That's the thing. If you capture them, if you get them registered, if you get them to vote in an election, they're probably going to vote in another one.
Well, I think the prediction is that if people have voted once in the last election, let's say, they're likely to vote in the next one. If they've never voted before, they are really hard to mobilize. And I followed some groups trying to register and mobilize voters in South Texas. And these are voters who have never voted before, who live in a culture where nobody votes. So they're not really induced to vote by their neighbors and their friends or their family. And trying to draw them out, even though their potential, if they were all to turn out, their potential would be huge and would really impact Texas elections. But they don't tend to see that.
I want to take another call from Julianne in Reynoldsburg, who apparently didn't get dinner if she didn't vote growing up. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi. Yeah, a rule of our family was that if you didn't vote, you didn't get dinner. And it didn't matter how you voted. We would discuss opinions, but you had to vote or you didn't get dinner. And all five of us kids and grandkids all have the same rules. My son was voting one time when I came in to vote after work, and he looked up from where he was and he goes, "Oh, I guess we both get dinner tonight."
I love that. You know, it's about instilling it in your kids. I always take my kids to go vote.
Well, and I think it's something that can be a family tradition as well, that if your parents voted and voted regularly and talked about it, the inclination was for the kids to follow through and vote and be embarrassed if they did and shamed if they did not, even after they had left the home.
That was Ohio State Professor Emeritus Paul Beck. Thank you for your time this morning.
Good to be with you.
Coming up, we're going to take more of your calls about whether or not you vote and hear from a new group that's trying to motivate Ohioans to vote against political extremism. And that's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Stever. Ohio had one of the highest turnout elections in 2020, and yet one in four of us didn't cast a ballot. 26% of eligible voters sat out that year. That is definitely more than enough people here to change the outcome of an election. So how do we convince them to vote? What would motivate them to the polls? Maria Bruno is trying to figure that out. She's the founder and executive director of a new statewide political nonprofit called Ohioans Against Extremism. It's part of a growing coalition of advocacy groups that are trying to rally voters in support of abortion access, LGBTQ rights, and public education. Welcome to All Sides, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot of frustration that seems to be fueling this effort. And you have a tagline that I'm changing to be more radio friendly, which is, we've had enough of the bull crap. What made you want to form Ohioans Against Extremism right here in this moment?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been doing political and legislative advocacy for several years now, and as have the rest of the people on my team. And I think there has been an increased frustration in the willingness of elected officials to really even care about what voters are thinking, let alone act on them. And I think that in large part is a result of a system that rewards partisanship and, frankly, just like antagonizing certain communities. We are about to see, I looked it up right before this just to make sure I said the right number, $400 million will be invested in our state this election season. There are going to be so many ads wall to wall every day in Ohio for Ohioans about this election, and they're all going to be partisan, and they're all going to be accusing someone else of, you know, malfeasance. And, you know, I've talked to some national people and I've said, like, you all spend a bunch of money on partisan political ads and then leave locals with the rubble that's left over and everyone's mad at each other after the election. And so we really wanted to get ahead of that big spending and start to really build a network that was specifically dedicated to, one, preserving like a decency floor. Like, we don't need to actually antagonize or marginalize or villainize certain communities to make our political points. We should be able to stand on the value of public policy and also incentivize those politicians and those campaigns to actually campaign in a way that's substantive. And also give voters an avenue for information and, you know, ways to get involved in the election that aren't built around partisanship. We have the large majority of Ohio voters are not partisan. Even the ones who aren't solely motivated by partisanship. And that avenue didn't really exist very well in a way where we could say be as opinionated as we wanted to be, because we have strong feelings about public policy and not rely on a partisan political structure to get us there.
I think partisanship, or hyper-partisanship as we call it these days, is probably one of the reasons people don't vote. They're like, I'm so sick of how ugly this is. Yeah. I'm just going to sit out.
Exactly. No, I think that's exactly it. And like, I encounter those people in my real life every single day who, you know,
I don't watch the news. It's too awful.
Exactly. It's too awful. You know, every time I turn it on, everyone's just arguing with each other, you know, calling each other names. They're not learning anything, and they're not wrong. All of those criticisms are extremely valid and, frankly, mostly accurate. But, you know, let's build something that people can enjoy and, you know, participate in and focuses on the substance of public policy.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Do you vote in every election? Have you never voted? We'd love to know why. You can give us a call at 614-292-8513. And I want to take a call from Iris in North Linden, who has not missed an election. And you've been voting for a long time, Iris.
Thank you very much for taking my call. My mother took me to register to vote 2 days after my 18th birthday. I am now 67 years old. My brother and sisters have been poll workers. We've always voted. It's just my parents made it a priority for us to learn about the political system. So we did. Now we participate.
Do you see it as a civic duty, like part of being part of this country?
I do, because if I am living in the United States of America, I need to be an active part, because I got really, really lucky and was born here, and I got better than 99% of the world. So I am going to participate.
Thank you so much, Iris. How, Maria, do you convince people who have never voted to be more like Iris, to vote in every election?
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, I was working at an organization specifically trying to mobilize low propensity voters. We were working with, you know, everywhere from libraries to food banks to housing authorities, a lot of places where people who are generally underserved and ignored during political elections hang out. And we were trying to get them to register to vote. That was our whole thing. And honestly, the main thing is just allowing people the space to ask about the things they actually care about. Don't tell them what they care about. And once they do express what they care about, connect that to the election. I mean, if they're really concerned about trash in their yard, okay, let's talk about local elections and what that has to do with investment in public services.
Never mind the presidential race.
Right. Like, yeah. Never mind the presidential race. You don't have to care about Donald Trump at all to, you know, want to vote. So we just want to make sure that people understand the connection between their own lives and voting, and just think of it more as a way to, you know, participate. what it is ultimately. Participate in the democratic process so that the person who ends up in that position of power is more likely to reflect your values.
I want to talk a little bit about extremism, which is what you're trying to mobilize against. And I don't want to ask, how are you defining political extremism? Because maybe one person's extreme is another person's step in the right direction.
No, I absolutely. And it's a fair question. And it's usually one of the first ones we get. And I think the, you know, primary avenues, you know, we do actually have a definition on our website. I don't have it in front of me. But the basic tenets are if you promote political violence.
That's fair.
If you, you know, marginalize, antagonize, or specifically attack a specific community. And if you are not following facts and logic and subject matter expertise. So, you know, we're like asking for bare minimum, like treat everyone with human decency, follow science, follow facts and reason. And frankly, that is enough to actually already have a group of politicians in power who are not doing that. And so, like, that's the floor that we're setting. And if someone says that it's extreme to follow science, I have some follow up questions.
Are you taking a position on the redistricting amendment? Because it sounds like what you're talking about when you say unresponsive legislature. Yeah. To me, that sounds like you're saying gerrymandered legislature.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think, and again, you know, I could rant about the party system for a long time, but I think ultimately when you have safe districts, whether those are for Democrats or Republicans, you have less accountability. It makes those politicians more accountable to the political party than their actual districts. I think that fair maps with more competitive seats that better reflect the actual political disposition of our state, those maps being drawn by people who are not going to be elected under them, is incredibly important for us to get back our, you know, democratic process and accountability.
I want to take a call from Eileen in Tip City, who voted for the first time in 2020.
Yay.
Welcome to All Sides.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I voted for the first time in 2020. I am a veteran. My husband's active duty. And my parents were military. We moved around a lot. So wherever we moved, it just didn't, I didn't really care about politics. You know, I was young, but even so, we were, you know, you live in a red state, you live in a blue state. So I just didn't really feel like voting really mattered, but I'm a nurse now. And, I guess, you know, in 2020, you know, going through the pandemic and being in isolation, I guess I was driven emotionally to vote for the first time. And now I am an activist and, I do what I can. Everybody I come across, I ask if they're registered to vote. You know, if that's just a personal question, I just ask them. And if they say yes, I'm like, all right, great, take care. And I do something called the Stamp Stampede that's run by Ben & Jerry, the owners of Ben & Jerry. And you stamp bills and say, my stamp says stop the attack on voting rights. And I put those on $2 bills and I tip people with them. Like, because they're kind of eye-catching, the $2 bills. So that's what I do now. I will continue to vote regardless of where we move. We are, our Arizona residency is still, we live in Ohio, but, you know, we still vote through Arizona. And I did that because it's a purple state. But, yeah, so that's what I have to say on that. And I just think, we really need to just come together. The divisiveness, it doesn't matter if, you know, you want to vote for Donald Trump or somebody else. It's what the community, it's your little inner circle that matters. And
you know, I think that's such an interesting point. It was the pandemic. It's when the election finally felt personal. Mm-hmm. How do you make it feel personal for someone who's like, I don't pay attention to politics?
I think elections are always personal. I mean, of course, I'm biased, but I think that every single election, even before Trump, even before we were dealing with some of the sort of, you know, high stakes stuff that we are seeing now, every single election shapes what the next few years in your locality looks like. And so I think that it's really a matter of helping people understand that. You know, I've had a lot of people who are like, how can I help? And my answer is figure out what you care about. Find an organization doing that and help that organization succeed. You know, and I think that that's ultimately the whole thing is just we have to be educating and advocating and connecting everyday voters to how politics actually affects their life.
Sounds like the job of political journalists as well.
That's right. You all can help.
But I do, you know, the DNC and the RNC had social media influencers credentialed for the first time. Yeah. And one of the things I found fascinating was the fact that they had non-political. They had, like, people who do food reviews, people who are fashion bloggers, people who do this, that, and the other. And the response was, they have audiences that aren't political. They have audiences that may be apolitical, and getting onto their feed is a way of contacting them. And I thought it was such a fascinating idea that we're recognizing that increasingly we have these, like, bespoke, personalized social media feeds, and this was a way to get them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I, you know, one thing that I have learned over the past few years of doing this is just how many people do really rely on other people paying closer attention than you. And I think what we're offering is a group of people that are going to pay more attention than you and then just give you the quick and dirty facts, you know, absent any specific partisan motivation. And I think, you know, like, I went to law school. I studied public policy. I have, you know, helped and worked with legislative language a whole bunch. I would like to think that I could maybe offer a little bit more context than someone whose job is inherently apolitical and that doesn't really spend much time reading the news. I think that they should use their audience, and I think that's awesome to help people gain awareness, but I also do think expertise matters, and we need to, like, start taking the feedback of people who are actually studying the issue.
Yeah, there's been some real, I don't know, economists who study get out the vote efforts. They have sort of middling success. You know, celebrities telling you to rock the vote doesn't always motivate one to vote.
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't even motivate the celebrities to vote, as we find out after the election.
No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it really has to be built in, I want to vote because I want something bad in my community to get better or something good in my community to stay around.
So how are you going to reach the voters who maybe have sat out or don't always vote? Like, what are the methods that you're going to be using at Ohioans Against Extremism?
I think a lot of what we're doing is trying to give people the microphone and access to information. So I think what that actually looks like in impact, we have a community partner program. We work with community partners all across the state, local, state, and national organizations. And the point of that is to be able to kind of have a two-way information stream for us to know what's actually happening on the ground, especially around political extremism, but also have those folks on the ground be getting accurate information about what's going down at the state house. And so we're going to be, you know, helping community groups all across the state be better prepared to handle extremist threats that are showing up in their backyard. And that's just really through teaching people, giving people the tools, and keeping them up to date on breaking news.
That was Maria Bruno, Executive Director of Ohioans Against Extremism. Where do we find you online?
ohagainstextremism.org. We will be launching a podcast soon. We will have a newsletter. We are going to work with a bunch of other issue groups that do wonderful work, and we're going to elevate that. So, yeah, please follow us and join and help us spread the message.
ohagainstextremism.org. I have to say, I just had to really reduce my urge to go I-O at the end of it.
Well, I was like, either that or everyone's going to spell it wrong because they'll say Ohio instead of Ohioans or Ohioans against Ohio. So I was like, you know what? Let's just cut the difference. Let's just do O-H.
That was Maria Bruno. Coming up, we're talking about art and how the creative community is trying to mobilize people to vote. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about what motivates people to vote this hour and why they don't. And what better way to motivate an artist than with art itself? This is the approach of a new statewide group working to mobilize the creative community to vote this November. Joining us now to talk about it is Sarah Sisser, Executive Director and CEO of Arts Vote Ohio. Welcome to All Sides.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Creative Ohio and the Greater Columbus Arts Council has formed this organization. What is Arts Vote Ohio?
Great question. Thank you for having me on today to talk a little bit about this. So Arts Vote as a national movement started in 2020 by the Arts Action Fund and Americans for the Arts. And I think that national effort really spurred several states to look inward and think about how they could amplify that message at a state level. And that was the case in Ohio when the Greater Columbus Arts Council really took the lead in launching Arts Vote Ohio. And for a couple of years, that initiative was primarily resharing some of the resources at the national level, at the federal level. And then GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Council, really just as a passion project, decided that they really wanted to make a go of this, to make it a statewide effort, and to really sort of drill down and amplify Ohio's creatives and their voices in getting the message out to go vote. And so we were approached at Creative Ohio, which is the principal arts advocacy organization in the state, by the Greater Columbus Arts Council last year, asking if we would like to come to the table and help to really make this a statewide effort. You know, our efforts at Creative Ohio are statewide. We have a great network. We are membership-based, so most of the largest and small and mid-sized arts organizations throughout the state are members of our collective and work with us on advocacy initiatives. And so, you know, at Creative Ohio, we really want to make sure that the creative sector understands how powerful they are as a collective, what the impact is of the creative sector in our state, and thus that they really should be grabbing their seat at the table. We want to raise the bar in terms of the legislative literacy and advocacy literacy of the creative sector. And at the entry level, at the most fundamental level, that engagement with the democratic process looks like voting. So this Get Out the Vote initiative made a lot of sense for us at Creative Ohio, and we're extremely appreciative of the Greater Columbus Arts Council for taking a leadership role in launching this Arts Vote Ohio initiative.
Your tagline is Vote Your Heart Out, with an emphasis on art and heart, so I love that. But, you know, in terms of from political cartoons to paintings to graphic design on campaign logos, I mean, art is all over the political landscape.
Well, I think art and democracy have many ties. And, you know, artists are sort of by their nature activists and advocates. And artists certainly know how to use their voices. We also want to make sure artists and creatives know how to truly engage in the legislative process, how to affect policy change, how to really be, as I said, grab their seat at the table. And so this initiative, you know, we leaned into the idea that peer-to-peer messaging is most effective. We know that from many of the organizations and individuals who have been active in voter engagement for far longer than we have, that peer-to-peer is really the most effective way to compel people to get out and vote. So leaning into that, we wanted to make sure that we used the voices of Ohio creatives and their artwork to compel other Ohio creatives to get to the polls. So you'll see on artsvoteohio.org that we use a lot of original art from Ohio artists. We've had sort of an open call for several months. We've at this point collected 40 pieces of art, which can be downloaded and used and shared freely by anybody who visits the website. All of those pieces of art are nonpartisan, but really convey a message of the importance of voting in the democratic process. Those come from 27 artists all over the state. And in addition to using their original art, we want to make sure we're using their voices. So you'll also see on the website a whole series of individual narratives, first-person accounts of the importance of voting and democracy to many arts leaders throughout the state of Ohio.
So it is about, it seems, making the election personal. Why this election matters to me and my life. So what is important for Ohio creatives? What motivates you guys to the polls?
Well, I think Ohio creatives, the creative sector in Ohio, is a microcosm of the state, right? So just like the full state, it is remarkably diverse. So when we really decided to relaunch this effort and make it more comprehensive, more inclusive,
We first started by compiling an advisory panel, and we made sure that that panel was really representative of the diverse creative sector throughout the state. So we had voices from some of our urban centers in the state, throughout the state, not just Central Ohio, but also some of our rural communities in the state of Ohio. We had representatives from some of our independent art schools in the state. So really looking at diversity in terms of age demographics, in terms of geography, and making sure that as we sort of talked through our strategy for this messaging, that we were beta testing it against, you know, several different individuals that were representative of the full spectrum of the creative sector in the state. So with that being said, I think creatives in the state value many different things. And obviously those value sets, those individual value sets are what compel you to vote. But with Arts Vote Ohio, we want to make sure that creatives understand that their vote at the federal, state, and local level can have a real impact on arts and culture funding. Mm. And so we do take steps on the site to educate creatives and society about how arts funding works, how to sort of follow the money, how to follow the trail from the federal level through the state and local level so that people understand that it's not just at the top of the ballot, but all the way down the ballot, that those issues can have relevance to your full value set, but definitely to the arts ecosystem in the state of Ohio.
And that's probably its most basic beginner level in arts education in our schools.
Absolutely. And, the arts, we talk about on the Arts Vote Ohio website, all the different ways that the creative sector impacts Ohio. And again, reminding creatives how impactful they are as a collective. Creatives number over 157,000 in the state of Ohio. And as a sector, we encompass more than 3% of the GDP of the state of Ohio. That's larger than utilities. It's larger than education. It's larger than agriculture. So it's significant.
Oh, my goodness.
But we know that, or creatives know this inherently, that it's not just the economic impact, right? If you look at any of the complex issues facing society and you sort of look at them or apply a arts lens in developing any kind of solutions to those problems, you'll see a positive impact. So, we know through a slew of research that arts exposure, arts education impacts overall school performance. It impacts recidivism rates. It impacts, there have been impacts on housing security, food insecurity. And so I think arts integration over many of these issues is really important for us to think about. Yes, of course, arts education, but the impact of the arts is widespread.
I want to take a quick call from Doug in Columbus. Doug is the chairman emeritus of the Franklin County Republican Party. Welcome to All Sides.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Calling, frankly, as chairman of the Board of Elections of Franklin County, the largest Board of Elections in the state of Ohio, one of the biggest in the country, just to try to inject a little bit of positivity, I sit next to the chairman of the Democratic Party on a regular basis, two Democrats, two Republicans, as every Board of Elections in Ohio operates. And 99% of the time we agree on stuff and we try to have free and fair elections. And I think we do a pretty good job. So great show today. Encourage your listeners to check out our website, vote.franklincountyohio.gov. Thanks for helping educate folks. Sarah, a great job here today talking
Thank
about
you.
The importance of arts. And keep it up, everybody, and vote, vote, vote. Thanks for taking my call.
This also feels like a good time to remind voters that October 7th is the deadline to register. You must be registered before October 7th, end of day, October 7th, and early voting starts the very next day, October 8th. So you have an upcoming Zoom call if people are interested, right? It's an All Creatives on Deck, Thursday, September 12th. How else can they connect with you?
So we're excited about several of the ripples we're already seeing from artsvoteohio.org. And one of those is a project that we're doing with the internationally renowned street artist Shepherd Ferry. Again, Creative Ohio's greatest asset resource is our connectivity, our vast network of arts organizations and leaders throughout the state. And so we've teamed up with several of our members and leaders. We're bringing Shepherd Ferry to the state of Ohio. all of the artwork that he installs and creates within the state in the middle of September will be themed around voter engagement. Again, nonpartisan voter engagement, encouraging voter turnout. He will be doing a massive permanent installation, a mural about voting in Cincinnati in the Over the Rhine neighborhood.
Oh.
He and his team will be installing several smaller wheat paste murals throughout the city of Cincinnati. And when they're done in Cincinnati, after a couple of days, they'll do some public engagement there as well. They will come up to Columbus and they will be installing, again, a series of wheat paste murals throughout the city of Columbus, thanks to the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Again, all of that artwork, the theme will be voter engagement. And so we're really excited to have a name like Shepherd Fairey help us to amplify this message of getting out the vote within the creative sector of Ohio. But we also want to make sure we're amplifying those voices of Ohio artists. So alongside Shepherd's visit in September, we're also creating yard signs with original Ohio, the work of original Ohio artists.
Oh, I can't put out political yard signs, but these sound like they might appeal to me.
That's right. And they're beautiful, too, on top of that, right? So we have selected artwork from artists in all of the cities, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati and Dayton, three artists in each of those cities, three original pieces that will be displayed on Artsvote Ohio yard signs with that URL at the bottom and just our general message of getting the vote out, vote your heart out. And we'll have more information about each of those artists on our website as well. So you'll be able to pick those up for free distribution at several sites throughout the state. So we're excited about that. Again,
when do the yard signs go out?
We are hopeful. Are you going to line
for
up?
For a friend.
Yeah. I don't yet know the details of the distribution in Columbus, but we're hopeful that we will have them starting September 15th. Again, Shepherd Fairey is going to do some public engagement, community conversation at the Contemporary Arts Center there on National Voter Registration Day, which is September 17th. And we hope to have the yard signs out and available there. And likewise, later in the week when he's in Columbus, we'll have them out for distribution. So they'll be free to the public.
I love that it's not about voting for a particular candidate, but more just a general encouragement to vote. Because that's the kind, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people can. You may not feel comfortable putting out a partisan yard sign, especially if you live in a neighborhood where perhaps you know you're in the ideological minority. But there's nothing wrong with just saying we should all go vote.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we believe that arts funding, it's not a partisan issue. You know, we know the benefits of the arts. We've been extremely fortunate in the state of Ohio that we've had bipartisan support for arts funding, both sides of the aisle. And so we really don't need to, you know, underscore the narrative of it being a partisan issue. We really just want the creative sector to understand, again, its collective influence and power and get to the polls. You exercise that right.
Can I ask you a slightly personal question?
Which
is
sure.
Not how you vote, but why do you vote? Why is voting important to you?
You know, I think what I've learned is that it's something that many of us take for granted, right? And the more I talk to people who maybe it was not something that they grew up doing. You know, my parents grew up taking us with them. I grew up going with my parents to the polls. And so I saw it being done. And so it was just sort of institutionalized within my family, right? But that's not the case in a lot of families. And there are many Ohioans for which there are some hurdles that you have to be more proactive about your decision to vote. You may have to plan ahead. You might have to plan for time off work. You may have to, if you have mobility or transportation issues, you have to plan around that. And so when I started to really think about the fact that this is, yes, it's a fundamental right of ours, but also it's something that I was taking for granted and I can freely and easily do it. I need to do it, right? And so I think that's important. Also, I truly do believe in the message for the creative sector that we do have great influence, that in order for us to long game, look at some of, to be more proactive in terms of policy and legislative measures and decisions, we need to really be engaged and understand the power and value of our individual votes and voices.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the cliche that decisions are made by the people in the room. And if you're not in the room, if you're not voting, you're not making those choices.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
particularly when it comes to local races. I've always been a big proponent of the fact that, like, your city council is really going to impact your day-to-day life, even down to whether they fund public arts projects.
Absolutely. You know, we have, within the state of Ohio, this vast network of local arts agencies. Of course, the Greater Columbus Arts Council in Columbus is a wonderful example and probably the largest local arts agency we have in the state. But we have them throughout the state that are helping to, you know, incubate and support the arts ecosystems within their communities. They're all funded in very unique ways. You know, within the state of Ohio, we have in Cuyahoga County, the only example of an excise tax on cigarettes that goes to fund arts and culture. So that's a very unique example. But those are local ballot issues, local funding options at a very granular level, a very, you know, micro level that affect the arts climate in our community. And for me, the arts are a quality of life issue. Right.
Yeah.
So again, nonpartisan issue. It's just about quality of life within our communities.
That was Sarah Sisser, Executive Director and CEO of Arts Vote Ohio. What's the website?
ArtsVoteOhio.org. You can also learn more about general advocacy, arts advocacy at CreativeOH.org for Creative Ohio.
Thanks so much. And just one final reminder, the deadline to register to vote for the November election is October 7th. Thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.